Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The weather outside may or may not be frightful, but it's still a good time to take stock of how the city of Chicago is doing when it comes to making bike riding and walking convenient and safe in good or bad weather. And we're going to talk with someone from a group that keeps track of those things and more. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Delamore, and this is At Issue. The Chicago-based Active Transportation Alliance is a nonprofit group that works to make things better for people on bicycles, on foot, and on public transportation. They've been among the most influential advocates pushing the city to improve its infrastructure for bikes and pedestrians, and frankly, Chicago looks a lot different than it did a couple of decades ago in that regard. Well, this holiday weekend, we want to see how well things and people are going with one of the top officials at the ATA. Jim Merrill is the Managing Director of Advocacy for the Active Transportation Alliance, and he joins me via Zoom conferencing. Jim, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Let's do a little ATA 101 for our listeners. Tell us a little bit about the group and the kinds of things that it does.
Sure. Well, you know, as you said, we are an advocacy organization. We work throughout the region, so not just in the city of Chicago, but throughout the Cook County and the Colorado counties as well, to advocate for improving our communities for walking, biking, and transit. And we do that not just because we think those things are fun and great, although they are, but we also know that walking, biking, and transit can really unlock important sustainability, health, and economic equity benefits for our communities.
Yeah, indeed. Obviously, walking is healthy for the people doing it. But, you know, if people are walking or riding and frankly, walking, they're not taking cars and that takes pollution out of the air. So that's healthy, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, switching people to more active modes, as we say, walking and biking or using public transit, gets folks out of cars, which cuts down on air pollution and also climate pollution. And is it, you know, as we know, are the stuff coming out of our tailpipes are a big contributor to climate change and actually the top source of carbon pollution right now in our city.
The Active Transportation Alliance has been instrumental in getting the city to of Chicago, especially, although, as you point out, it's going on in the suburbs, too, to develop and expand its network of bike lanes. And it's really a thing downtown now. What's the most gratifying thing about how the city has been changing to accommodate bike riders and, frankly, pedestrians, too?
Well, I guess speaking for myself personally, you know, I've been doing this work for about 10 years. I noticed a shift in the conversations I was having with people like you when they stopped asking me to justify why were we accommodating bikes or framing the conversation in a bikes versus cars frame. And the conversation started talking about, you know, the benefits and the boon for the city of Chicago. And so, you know, I think over the particularly, you know, when Mayor Rahm Emanuel came in, his administration, you know, due to advocacy from groups like ours and others, really made this a priority in the way that, you know, previous administrations had not. And I think in terms of what's gratifying is, you know, you said it right there. We really have seen in certain parts of the city what a kind of complete, comfortable, low stress, high quality bicycle network on our streets can really look like. And the problem now is, how can we take that same experience that we're starting to see downtown and make sure it's accessible to every single resident in every single neighborhood in our city?
And that is a challenge. Is it happening in some areas of the city the way you want to see it?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, you know, we've seen Mayor Lightfoot's administration, you know, continue the focus on building out the bike network that began under the Emanuel administration. And the, you know, Chicago Department of Transportation is primarily responsible for implementing these projects. And we have, you've seen them really elevate their game in terms of the number of projects and mileage that they're delivering, but also going deeper in specific neighborhoods. So over the last few years, they've developed what they call their neighborhood bicycling strategy, whereby they're focusing on a specific neighborhood and spending basically a whole year with the community to talk about what types of destinations people need to access and what streets they think would be best for bicycle infrastructure, and then going immediately and trying to build out as much of that stuff as they can. So that's a new approach that CDOT has been taking, that we've seen in Belmont Cragen, and then more recently in North Lawndale, also in the 48th Ward in the Uptown area. And again, kind of similar to, you know, we're seeing great success downtown. Our big question, our big challenge to the city is, how do we scale this activity up so that we're really seeing progress across the city and not just in different pockets where the city has the capacity to focus?
Yeah, some of the complaints that I have heard has been that some of this infrastructure, that a lot of the infrastructure is on the north side. And now you mentioned North Lawndale, so we are talking about neighborhoods that are outside of the central city, but that there's still a lack of it in some areas. And frankly, we also don't see the bike rentals as much outside of the loop as we do elsewhere.
Yeah, the Divvy bike share system, which is expanding after starting out in a more limited footprint towards the core of the city. The city, with its partnership through Lyft, which actually operates the system, I know is you know, rolling out new expansion, a lot of new electric Divvy bikes. And a lot of those bikes are going into communities where we haven't seen them before. The problem is that while those e-bikes are fun to ride, they're a lot more expensive than the kind of the conventional pedal bikes. And so while you know, we're seeing Divvy expand into more neighborhoods, we're not seeing it necessarily become the accessible everyday transportation option that we really are hoping for it to be. So in terms of bike share, that's still a place where, you know, we've seen a lot of growth and a lot of progress, but there's still improvements that could be made in terms of equitable access and equitable pricing. And then with our streets, you mentioned, you know, disparity in terms of conditions for biking throughout the city. And I'd say historically that might have been, you know, the case, but I do feel, again, in the, you know, the last 7 or 8 years, we've seen the Department of Transportation try to much more deliberately focus. I know a couple of years ago they did a deliberate planning approach on the far south side, knowing that they were going to be bringing additional Divvy bikes to the far south side of the city, and they added some additional bike facilities there. So, you know, I think there's activity we're seeing around the city. But one thing that we really haven't seen is, again, kind of what's the overall vision and the citywide plan to make sure that we're connecting each and every neighborhood, rather than kind of what we're seeing now is much more of a piecemeal opportunistic approach, which is getting a lot of good stuff done, but maybe not in the most strategic or equitable way.
Is it that you're seeing it, for example, in linking some things like, you know, the 606 and Lakeshore Drive, where there you're hooking different pieces together to make a unified whole? But is that the kind of thing that you want to see on a wider scale?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I mean, a lot of trips, this neighborhood approach at the city that I talked about that the city's taking really does address a lot of the types of trips that people are taking. You know, people like to ride within usually a couple miles if they're going to use it to actually replace a car trip. But we also know people go between neighborhoods and go from outlying areas to downtown or vice versa. And so if we only focus on kind of building out a neighborhood network without also having, you know, our street network for cars, right? We have residential streets, arterials that take us a little bit further and our expressway system. So, you know, back in 2012, the city released a citywide vision for our bike network called the Streets for Cycling Plan 2020. And that included this concept of spoke routes. So really these kind of inter-neighborhood super highways for bikes to create these kind of long distance corridors that are safe and comfortable so people of all ages and abilities can use them. And while we've seen a lot of great new bike infrastructure pop up and some neighborhoods get some really great attention, we haven't seen those kind of linkages be built out in the way that was envisioned by that original plan, which really is now kind of fallen by the wayside.
Is there a way to jumpstart the kind of talks that could do that, or is money the problem? Is it a matter of finding the resources to do these things?
You know, usually money is the first problem, and for a long time that has been the excuse. However, you know, after the last few years, we have seen resources for these types of street projects actually coming online in a way that they haven't before. So the city has the Chicago Works Capital Improvement Plan, which was first passed last year, and has a large amount of money dedicated for pedestrian and bicycle safety improvements. And that's local dollars. So the city has full control over what they can do with that. And that allows them to do a lot more things like physically protected bike lanes more quickly than they would if they were using other pots of money from the state or the federal government, where oftentimes there's more administrative red tape or timelines that they have to follow and process steps. So the fact that we have this local pot of money, which was just renewed recently, and it's going to keep flowing, is really great in terms of the city being able to quickly build out its network of bike lanes. But what we don't have is this kind of vision for a connected network on our streets, and what's the kind of network that we're building towards. And so I think, you know, especially since we have this money and we know we're going to be able to be spending, you know, millions of dollars over the next few years on our streets, we think it's really critical to have a kind of an overarching vision and plan that provides a kind of transparency and accountability. You know, we all expect from our public sector leaders.
I want to also ask before we move, because I do want to talk about some of the other challenges, but is there anything either particularly good or particularly challenging going on with regards to pedestrians?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we've seen, unfortunately, pedestrians and drivers both experiencing an uptick in the number of fatal crashes, both nationally and here locally. And so, you know, pedestrians continue to face a lot of challenges, especially our most vulnerable pedestrians. When we think about older adults, people who use wheelchairs or other mobility aids, young children, you know, our streets are often not designed to enable folks to safely cross or get where they're going. So unfortunately, yeah, I mean, I think we're still seeing the persistent challenge with a lot of preventable injury and death still happening on our roadways. But some of these, you know, new resources I just mentioned that the city has access to build out bike lanes also can assist with other types of traffic safety improvements for both drivers and pedestrians.
There have been some headlines recently about efforts to or proposals for the city to be responsible for shoveling sidewalks. And I know some of it was raised by the communities or advocates for the disabled, but I would think, you know, pedestrian organizations like yours would also have some feelings about that, because not all people can shovel their sidewalks, and frankly, some businesses and others don't, and it doesn't get enforced that much. And is that a concern?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this Plow the Sidewalks campaign is actually being led by our partners at Access Living, which is a disability rights advocacy group, and our friends at Better Streets Chicago, which is also a Safe Streets advocacy group here working here locally in Chicago. And we're proud to be partners on that campaign. But you're absolutely right. I mean, I think anyone who lives in Chicago is familiar with, no matter how you use the sidewalk, the experience of your trip suddenly becoming a lot more complicated because a segment is on uncleared or has been left for weeks and it now is icy, or right at the intersection where the crosswalk meets the ramp, the sidewalk ramp, you're finding frozen puddles of slush and you don't know how deep it is. So this is a real challenge to mobility in our city. And again, we know it's something that's disproportionately impacting the most vulnerable in our city. So that's why this is one of the top issues our partners at Access Living say when they talk about transportation with their leaders. This is what they're hearing about. And so we've seen peer cities like Toronto where snow removal is a municipal service. So just in terms of a practical feasibility, we know human beings are capable of delivering snow removal as a municipal service. It just hasn't been something that I think has been within the realm of possibility and people's kind of hopes and dreams here locally. So I know this campaign's just entering its second year, and we're excited to keep supporting it. And really, I think, in general, we want to elevate everyone's expectations for how the city should be open to them and how easy it should be for folks to move from point A to point B. And that includes, raising our game when it comes to winter weather.
Indeed. In fact, one of the arguments I know that the disability advocates make is, besides the fact of how much it affects that population, is fining, a 70-year-old person who lives in a house in a particular neighborhood because they didn't shovel their walk is not helpful. It hurts that person who couldn't get out there and shovel, and it also leaves their sidewalk unshoveled. So
it doesn't actually solve the problem, right?
Exactly. You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm Craig Delamore. My guest is Jim Merrill. He's the managing director for advocacy with the Active Transportation Alliance. And I want to talk about some of the very serious problems. And I think that probably advocates like you would think it's a victory that the city, Chicago City Council, in its last meeting of the year, approved a bike lane law that makes it easier to ticket and tow cars that are blocking bike paths. And can you talk a little bit about how that got going and what the problem is that this addresses?
Yeah, so the problem is well known to anyone who rides a bike here in Chicago, and that is the problem of cars either parking or idling, obstructing bike lanes. And while you might say, well, someone could just go around the car, it's actually that type of movement next to a busy travel lane that can lead to preventable crashes. And in fact, just this summer, there was a fatality involving a young child on the back of her mother's bike, where the mother had to navigate around an obstructed bike lane, and they were struck by a semi, and the child was killed. So, this idea of obstructed bike lanes being a real safety threat is a real threat and a real problem. And I think a lot of times drivers think that, like, oh, I'm just going to hop out quickly and run in and take care of my business. It's not a big deal. Unfortunately, this summer we saw a really heartbreaking reminder that it is a big deal. At the same time, it's a hard problem to deal with. Long term, we think the solution is hardening our infrastructure. So doing things like making protected bike lanes separated from car lanes with concrete curbs or elevating them above the street level, like we see in other parts of the world, in Europe and South America. That type of infrastructure ultimately is a long-term solution. In the meantime, though, we know we have a problem and a real challenge today. The extent of this problem, I think, is best reflected that there's an entire advocacy movement that has grown up around just reporting obstructed bike lanes and trying to bring this issue to the forefront of the city's attention. And so I don't think we can talk about this issue without talking about Bike Lane Uprising and the work that that organization has done to really document this problem citywide and engage in some really effective advocacy to raise the salience of this issue with leaders, and resulting in this increase in the fine and making it easier for Department of Finance folks to actually get a call for vehicles to be towed. So the police don't need to be involved. It's removing an extra step in the process. But ultimately, like this fines and fees approach, I don't think anyone likes to have, fines and fees and tickets and punishment be our, the tool that we use, the stick. We really, really, really think this is, again, kind of getting back to what we were talking about earlier, and this idea of not just for bikes, but, for our active transportation network in general. We need to have a long-term vision for change of how we're going to use the dollars that we have available now from the city capital plan and from the federal infrastructure bill to build out the type of bike network that we know we can build. We have the technology, we have the know-how, we have the money. Now we just need the political will to make it happen.
How much of this also needs to be a culture change where people, and frankly, I think this is the part of the impetus for the law, is the new law, is that, well, if a few people start getting ticketed for this or towed, maybe they will think twice before they commit the behavior. Like, for example, people know you should look before you open your car door if there's a bike lane nearby. Have we seen a drop? There used to be like an almost epidemic of people running into doors being opened. Are people better about that now?
That's a really difficult thing to measure. And I don't have like the most recent. One of the things that has happened is that they started collecting data specifically on was this a door related crash or not. So we don't have data going very far back. However, that still is one of the most common kinds of crashes. But I do think you're absolutely right in terms of the public. That's a really good example of a public awareness campaign and initiative that has really aided to that. But also the probably the biggest thing that is the infrastructure that the city has built, where a lot of the bike lanes, even the ones that don't have that physical protection or some kind of vertical separation, they often have a horizontal buffer where a door has much more room to open up into the bike lane and much less of a chance to cause that really dangerous type of crash that you talked about.
Now, is this the quieter season for bike riding? I do want to talk about some other things, but I have colleagues who certainly ride in cold weather, sometimes in rainy conditions. But I mean, does it kind of fall off for the winter?
I mean, we certainly don't see like the joyriding or the tourists as much. We don't have really great hard data and bike counts, but some of the snippets that we do have beyond this, the anecdotal data that everyone knows, like that there's that one person in there at their workplace that just rides all winter long and has all kinds of cool clothes and stuff, is actually when the city has done bike counts during the middle of winter, they have seen, particularly on some of these busier corridors like Milwaukee Avenue going up the northwest side, that bike traffic as much as 40% of the peak summer levels. And so, there still are people out there biking. And that's why when we talk about snow removal, sidewalks we think should be the top priority, but making sure that we're clearing our bike lanes and making sure that those are passable year round too. Because other cities which have even more fearsome winters than us are able to do this. Minneapolis is a good example. Calgary actually has a pretty good bike network and a pretty serious winter biking culture. So it can become a more viable option if we invest in the infrastructure and services to make it useful for folks year round.
Do you ride in the winter?
I do not. I am more of a fair weather. I am more of a fair weather rider. When I do, I won't take like longer rides. Like I won't commute in. I live on the Northwest side. I won't like ride in. But I do. One thing I have enjoyed in the winter is having access to those Divvy bikes because they got nice thick tires and they got like disc brakes, so you feel a little bit stronger and more secure plowing through or dashing through the snow. Right. So that's my winter riding hack: is get yourself a Divvy.
Oh, there you go. Now let's talk about mass transit, because I don't want to leave that uncovered here. What does Active Trans do for transit riders, and what are your big issues?
Yeah, well, similar to our work on walking and biking, we're a bridge between community members and residents and decision makers, and we help mobilize our grassroots members and supporters and partner organizations around an agenda for making transit accessible for everyone who needs it. But right now, we're in a, I talked about how we've seen, crashes, serious injuries and crashes, particularly among motorists and pedestrians, increasing. We're also facing a crisis with transit right now. And that is something people have probably seen, splashed across the headlines or on the local news coverage, concerns about safety, about addressing the human needs of the homeless population or others using transit, the lack of service or the lack of reliable service due to a real worker shortage that CTA is facing. And so we're facing a real challenging time for our transit system, and the kind of broader context. We're in this tough moment. We're kind of coming. We're still like the pandemic isn't over. We're still dealing with all these things, right? So I think to some degree we're seeing that play out on our transit as we are elsewhere. But we're also facing a real serious fiscal cliff in a couple of years. There's been a huge drop off in ridership, which is a big part of the transit agency's revenue streams. There has been some COVID relief money that's made the CTA and Pace and Metra and the RTA relatively flush. But that money is going to run out in a couple of years. And so we're going to need a plan to kind of fill in a pretty large hole if our transit system isn't going to collapse. And so we urgently need to be doing things not just to address the kind of safety and reliability crisis that we're facing right now, but also making sure that we're making the case up and down the levels of government that we need to be supporting our entire regional transit network and fully funding operations, not just our new train lines, looking at things like flexing some of our highway money to support transit operations instead of building more climate polluting roadways. And we have this kind of archaic law that requires all of our transit agencies to get about 50% of their revenue from the fare box. And so, we need to do away with that law and realize that, we can't hold our transit agencies to these kind of untenable revenue requirements when we know it's, the service they provide is such an economic and social benefit.
Yeah, I've talked within the last week or two to the director of the RTA, who said that model of half the money from the fare box just isn't sustainable. But are you seeing a movement in some other direction?
I think we are. I think because we've been facing these, these challenges and headwinds, I think people have often, we always want our transit to be better, but the transit system that Chicago has is remarkably extensive, and we are well served relative to other regions, and that's a big part of our city's secret to success. And I think now that we're seeing it under threat, people are waking up and realizing that we can't just take the system for granted.
That is Jim Merrill. He's with the Active Transportation Alliance, and I thank you for spending this half hour with us. To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or to hear it again, please visit our website at WBBMNewsRadio.com. You can also find our podcasts on Odyssey.com. We'll be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you'll be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Delamore, 105.9 WBBM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.